Welcome to the Pig Health Today podcast, where we talk all health all the time. Hear engaging interviews with today's leading industry experts. Hosted by Pig Health Today editors, podcast episodes highlight the latest ideas, insights, and advice to improve pig health, welfare, and performance.
Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Dr. Daniel Gasho. He is a swine veterinarian at Four Star Veterinary Service. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, doctor, you've had the dubious honor of discovering a new swine disease, or at least new to the U.S. Industry. Tell us about it.
I think it's really just a good reminder that no matter how many times you think you know all the diseases, you think you've seen them all, you know exactly, we get in this rut of, those symptoms sound familiar. I know what it is before I even get there. And then you get there and it kind of wakes you up and reminds you, oh, there's stuff out there you've never seen before, because I got there and I'm like, I have no idea what is going on. So,
and what exactly were you seeing?
The first thing the producer called and said was, I've had a lot of pigs die. Well, that means different things to different people. But this specific producer has raised pigs for a lot of years, and he's used to seeing things that aren't ideal. It's a buying station. They get pigs, you know, that are probably of lesser quality, mm-hmm. lower health status. But when he said a lot are dying, I'm like, well, how many is a lot? And the way this barn is set up, it's a buying station. So mm-hmm. pigs come in and go out on the same day. So there's never a set population to make it easy to measure a mortality. But in any given time, he probably has 1,000 on site. And I said, how many have died in a week? Oh, he said at least 500.
Wow, 500.
Then that gets your attention. Like, if you can put a number on it and say 50% died in a week, like, okay, we got something real going on.
So before we even talk about what this disease is, we're going to keep our audience in suspense. what did you think it was?
Well, honestly, if that many animals are dying that fast, I initially wasn't thinking a pathogen, like a bacteria or a virus, because in this country, we don't have things that kill pigs that fast, that many. In general, nothing kills 50% of the pigs within a week. PED doesn't do that. Acute PRRS outbreak doesn't do that. At least not adult animals. We're not talking newborn baby pigs here.
Yeah.
So the first thing that was going through my mind was the way one-off stuff that they mention in vet school that you never actually see. A lightning strike that didn't really fit in a barn setting. Toxin in the feed, you know, botulism or something really unusual like that. But the odd thing was, in the same buying station were multiple other species that were not affected. So if it was something in the water, say the water's contaminated with an unknown toxin, it's a pig-specific toxin because nothing else is affected. Okay, so you go down the feed route. Well, the feed mill that is bringing feed to the buying station literally takes the exact same diet to lots of other finishers in the area, not affected at all. So kind of ruling out feed, kind of ruling out water, kind of ruling out strange electrical surges. I mean, because environmental type things are what you think of initially. If it was a finisher, you know, ventilation got shut off, something along those lines, because we just didn't really have any contagious diseases that kill that many pigs that fast.
So this is where you sort of morph from being a veterinarian to a detective. I mean, it sounds like a CSI crime scene.
I felt like a forensic, like, investigator. You know, I'm taking feed samples and water samples and checking other species and checking environment and just really scratching my brain here. So, yeah.
So what was the next step?
I did go through the steps of reporting it to the proper authorities because it was so extreme. It made me think, could this be a foreign animal disease? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously ASF and things like that are buzzwords in the industry right now, so nobody wants to be the one to let that into the country. So went down all of those pathways. A full foreign animal disease investigation was not open, so they didn't actually quarantine the farm. That was out of my control. But took full sets of samples. Of course, Friday evening is when this happened, so it limited our turnaround time of getting samples to the lab and making that happen. But full set of tissues, they went to Iowa State and wait at that point.
So you sent it to Iowa State, you got the results back. What did you learn?
A whole bunch of things that it wasn't. So the way PCR tests work, I mean, you can test for a specific thing and you get back positive or negative. So of course they tested for everything under the sun. Negative, 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 negative.
You've done all the PCR. You've seen all the symptoms. At this point, you really don't have a clue.
Right.
What was the end result?
So at this point, before we found the smoking gun, I actually got more calls from the site. I went back out there because still this whole time, I'm thinking along the lines of maybe it is something that these old immunosuppressed, low health call cells and borers are just especially susceptible to because of just their health status. You know, maybe they have weakened immune systems. So while I'm still waiting on the results from the initial diagnostics, he calls me again. And he says, I brought in, I think it was somewhere around 500-600 feeder pigs, which is unusual for a buying station.
Yeah.
But they were going to a roaster pig market or something. He says up and down, these were perfect health pigs. You know, they weren't coughing, they weren't scouring, they're 50 pounds, they're single source, they're uniform population. So blessing or curse, we had a perfect control group. You know, let's see how these do in this environment. If it's something that healthy pigs won't be affected by, then this is a good example to test this out. Half of them died within 48 hours. As I'm standing here, I am watching pigs die around me. Standing in a pen, pig drop over dead. That pig was dead and it was alive 5 seconds ago.
Wow.
I mean, they were literally dying in front of me. So send in more tissues, repeat the very same thing I did before, you know, and don't know what else to do. Collect feed, water, test everything, full sets of tissues from multiple pigs, just keep on redoing it. Maybe we missed it on the first set. So the way we got to the diagnosis was eventually they noticed a pattern because they had actually grown Strep equi subspecies zooepidemicus from the very first tissues that I sent in, but nobody had ever even heard of that.
And zooepidemicus.
Yeah. So Strep equi meaning horse, a strep that's normally found in horses, and then this specific subspecies zooepidemicus, they had found from the beginning with their normal culture of the mm-hmm. tissues, but that specific bacteria had never been known to cause disease in pigs or ever even been found. So they assumed it was an incidental finding because tissues get contaminated. That's not a known pathogen of swine in this country. But after I've sent in like the sixth full set of tissues here, and 100% of every single tissue from every single pig grew extremely high levels of that specific bacteria. They went wow. back and cultured all the tissues from all the pigs and found it in very high levels in every single one. So like, well, maybe this is the real thing. So,
and when I think of strep and pigs, of course, I think of strep suis, and I don't think there's a pork producer in the United States that hasn't had some experience with that. How does this bug differ?
I wasn't really even seeing, you know, your typical anywhere from swollen joints, neurologic signs, you know, nystagmus, pigs down paddling, all the things you think of with strep. They never got to that point because they're dead within 48 hours of exposure. It's just an extremely acute, full body, systemic bacterial sepsis, raging inflammation of every organ, organ failure,
wow.
death. So this is just my clinical observations. It seemed like they would come in and somehow get exposed. And within 6 to 8 hours of arrival, they don't feel good. They're laying down and they aren't gonna move again. They're not comatose. You could make these animals get up and move, but they don't want to. They're not eating, they're not drinking. And if you would take their temperatures, I mean, I was finding fevers in animals that had been dead for a few hours, like 108. And this wasn't a hot time of year either. So my opinion is they just got a sepsis so bad and the inflammatory response was so high that they just, for lack of a better term, burn up. I think I was seeing a few neurologic signs, but with fevers pushing 110, anything will show neurologic signs. I mean, it's just messing with their brain. So I don't think the pathway was quite the same as strep suis, where it actively colonizes their brain and causes meningitis. They just got a fever to the point that they eventually died.
Well, I guess the good news, if you can call it that, is that it is a bacterium. We have a lot of antibiotics available to us. What did you do? Did you use antibiotics to bring this under control?
It was susceptible to about every readily available product we have. It's not what you would call a particularly tough or resistant bacteria. So the good news is, if any farm were to get this, they could probably easily treat it with whatever their veterinarian thinks is appropriate. The bad news is, like I said, within 6 or 8 hours of exposure, they were done eating or drinking. Mm. So, you know, poor timing. If a farm gets exposed and breaks with this on a Friday evening and nobody checks it till whenever they get around to it on Saturday, it's too late. They're not eating or drinking. So you either got to get on a fast while they're still drinking to get medication into them, or be given a lot of injections, because if you don't eat or drink, it's hard to get our oral, you know, medications into them that are easily usable for populations. What we did finally realize is, as highly, highly contagious as this apparently was, it didn't seem to aerosolize at all. It was very hardy in the environment and very rapid from direct contact, but did not aerosolize.
That's good news.
Yeah, so we were able to basically do, I guess you could call it a rolling depop. We could never 100% depopulate the site, so it was trial and error. But we finally found a commercially available disinfectant that worked, and we would empty several pens, go through the proper process of, you know, organic material out and disinfect and dry, and we would leave a buffer zone so that no pigs ever were in clean pens and next to pigs that were still on site, and we just gradually walked it out. The disinfectant did work. So.
Now, since your discovery, there have been a few other incidents reported in the U.S.
So most of those have been epidemiologically linked back to this incident case. The call market, trucks are going everywhere, you know, pigs are going back and forth, and so that's the unfortunate nature of the type of site that it found its way into.
But if they're like this particular situation where you don't know it's in the herd, I mean, is there anything operations can do to protect themselves from this so they don't incur 50% losses?
As soon as this happened, the diagnostic lab reached out to all the appropriate federal agencies, and the Board of Animal Health were all involved, and so everybody was on alert. So as soon as they got similar clinical signs at these slaughter plants or wherever else it might be, they immediately were checked for Strep pseudoepidemicus, because, and oh, sure enough, there it is. So it definitely sped up the time to identifying once we knew this was a thing. And so that's going to be a big help, just the fact that the labs know to look for it now.
Thanks for listening to the Pig Health Today podcast. To get the latest news and interviews delivered to your inbox twice a week, subscribe to our e-newsletter by visiting pighealthtoday.com/join.